Hi, this is Kendall Boyson, professional life and recovery coach, and you're listening to Encouragementology, the practice of instilling hope. Good evening and welcome to Encouragementology. Thank you so much for joining me tonight. We're gonna think about a point of view. The point of view tonight is, what's the point? What's the point? How many times have you asked yourself that this year? Or maybe this month? Or even actually today? How about that? How many of you have said, what's the point today? Are you stressed, overwhelmed, bogged down, wondering, what's the point? Now, more than ever, it seems that that feeling is just part of it. If you're not stressed out, then you aren't working hard enough. Your goals aren't big enough. You aren't giving it all you got. Giving what? What's the point? Well, before we accept that this is just the way life is in this day and age, let's do some evaluation, some discovery, and find a few ways to escape at least some of life's pressures. No need to beat around the bush. What's wearing you down? It's okay. It's just you and me, so we can be honest. What are you doing that is burning you out? Can we take a hard look at it and see why? Is it even necessary? Or what else you could be doing instead? I, for one, am queen of the spinning plates, and I coach about this all the time. But isn't that just it? If we could take our own advice, wouldn't we be free of any issues? Don't they say the cobbler's kids have no shoes? It's so true. I've never been a good manager, and I'm using air quotes, manager. Now, I'm a good mentor, a good trainer, but I have a hard time delegating projects or responsibilities. I love to learn, and I love to be self-sufficient, at least as self-sufficient as I can. Okay, I know what you're saying out there, control freak, and maybe that does have some degree of truth. Why would I take the time to train somebody else, then monitor their progress, and at the end have to check all their work when I could just do it myself? Have you ever said that? Maybe you're like me. Have you ever thought, if I could just find a few more hours in the day? Oh boy, we both need some help. Well, I found some help on Psychology Today. Nine reasons why we are more overwhelmed today. Think about it. For those of us that have lived back in the day and today, maybe not way back in the day as far back as I'm going to take you with Psychology Today, but have you been ramping up? Has it escalated? Do you feel more overwhelmed today than you did 10 years ago? Have you stopped to think about that? Is it just the season in your life, or is there something that could be contributing to that? Well, one, we compare ourselves to more people. Like back in the day, our hunter-gathering ancestors might have lived in tribes of 50 to 150 people, and they might have encountered only 1,000 people in their whole lives. When they compared themselves to others, there was plenty of reasons to feel good about themselves, right? With thousands of things to be good at, it was not very likely that they would run into a whole lot of people that were as good as they were at those things. They might have been the go-to person for some skill or idea or some attribute. They might have even been the best looking or the strongest person in the whole world. Can you imagine being able to say, I'm the strongest person in the whole world? The problem with wanting to be the best at something in the modern world is that in the modern world, we're connected to 7 billion people, and mass media is always there to show us the best of the best. Instead of comparing our physical attributes to those of 150 people in our tribe, we compare our physical attributes to the top 150 people out of 7 billion people. No matter which attribute we choose, we always find ourselves coming up short. Pick any skill, and chances are we can find someone on YouTube who performs that skill far better than we do. All of this leaves us overwhelmed with feelings of inadequacy and obsessed with finding ways to boost our self-esteem. I see this more than ever in the younger generation. I've actually coached some younger people, and it is shocking to me how far behind they feel at age 19 and 20. 19 and 20, when you're just ramping up and you've got the whole world in front of you. To already feel down on yourself and inadequate at 19 or 20? Whew. And it's mostly because of everything they see on the web. This person is doing this, and this person has this, and oh, this person just got all this money, and this person just got this special award. We're flooded with everyone doing their best, or so it seems. We also have more anxiety about what's going on in the world. Like back in the day, if something bad happened to one of the members of your tribe, you'd hear about it. Most days, though, not much bad happened. In the modern world, when there are 7 billion chances for something bad to happen to someone, and our communication systems ensure that wherever it is, whatever it is, we'll hear about it. A tragedy that might happen once per year in a tribe of 150 will happen many times a minute in a tribe of 7 billion. The irony is that while the world is safer than ever, we feel like it's more dangerous than ever. Our ancestors were more likely to die of violence or infection than we are today. But our perception is the reverse. Personal communication today is much more complicated. Personal communication takes more work these days. It's not because we have more relationships to manage than our ancestors did. We don't actually have that many more personal relationships. Instead, it's the way we have to manage those relationships that make things more difficult. The problem is that we must compartmentalize more. Back in the day, everyone knew each other and everyone shared the same context. Today, we travel in different circles. We have work friends, school friends, family friends, church friends, and so on. Most of the people in one circle don't even know the people in the other circle. And this presents us with a communication challenge. Facts taken for granted in one circle must be explained in another circle. And sometimes that can be pretty difficult. For instance, those who work in specialized fields might find it very difficult to explain to friends and family what it is they're studying in school or doing for a living. The communication challenge is part of what leads us to develop different personas. Do you act differently to some of your friends at work versus the friends at home? Do you ever get lost with who you've told what? Not lying, but keeping them up or keeping them in the loop. The personas help us keep us straight, keep the facts straight, but we take those for granted. But the more personas we have, the more disjointed we feel, and the more work we have to do to keep things straight. More spinning plates. Managing values is much more complicated today. While discussing facts has become a little more complicated, discussing values has become vastly more complicated. Back in the day, everyone shared the same religion, and there were no political ideologies. Today, most of us have friends and acquaintances representing many different religious views, many different political views, and many different ideas about what makes for a good society, right? Whew, I have certain circles. I just can't open my mouth about any of it. It can go in a totally different and almost aggressive way. Diversity brings us many benefits. Diverse societies are more inventive, and people who embrace diversity can learn to see life from many different perspectives. But diversity imposes psychological costs as well. Today, our minds are far more occupied with normative matters. We must spend more time working out what our own opinions are, and we have to spend more time figuring out how we're going to deal with the people in our lives and who we disagree with. Do we live the close? Do we live in a closet? Live in a bubble? Try to make everyone happy? Should we avoid certain topics? Should we talk about it? Should we not talk about it? Do they identify? Do they not identify? It can be pretty complicated to have social relationships in this day and age. We also have more aspirations and much bigger bucket lists. What did people aspire for back in the day? I don't know. Let's speculate. Some might have aspired to lead the tribe or have 10 children or become the best berry picker, clothing maker, spear maker. Some might have aspired to climb the mountain or to be one of the very brave enough to wrestle a crocodile. Who knows? You could come up with a billion fun scenarios. It's all a good guess, though. They were exposed to fewer large time-consuming aspirations than most of us are today. They had fewer aspirations because fewer things were possible. They didn't aspire to visit all 50 states or the seven wonders of the world. They didn't aspire to learn seven different languages or master five instruments. They didn't aspire to develop three different tech firms, make $10 million, or finish off the perfect kitchen with granite countertops. But we do aspire to things like these. These bucket list items tend to be very big projects and are often put in our heads by other people almost at random. We read an article, 100 movies you must see before you die. And what? We're obliged to see all those movies. It said it. We must see them. There must be movies out here that we haven't seen that we really should see before we die. What are we missing? Technology has delivered us an embarrassment of riches. There are too many neat places to visit and cool things we can accomplish, and our minds are built to want to do them all. But trying to do them all is overwhelming and a fool's errand. We have more temptations than we've ever had. In order to have temptations, you need two things. One part of your mind wants to follow a rule, like either consciously or unconsciously, and another part of your mind wants to break the rule. Modern life hits us from both sides. Modern media gives us more instruction to resist our biological urges, and it also gives us more invitations to satisfy our biological urges. The result is that we have to wrestle against more temptation. Modern media tells us over and over and over we need to watch what we eat so we can have that perfect body. And then modern marketing also brings us everything that we want to eat, like videos of hot pizza, cheesecake, juicy burgers. Modern media drills into our heads the importance of being industrious and productive so we can make more money. And then modern marketing also shows us 1,000 fun things that we should be doing instead of working. You see what I'm saying? It's all working against us. Way more distractions than we ever have, right? Smartphones and social media are great. They add a lot of value to people's lives, but doesn't it seem like a little off when people can't drive their cars for 10 minutes without checking their text messages? Or we're constantly marketing ourselves on social media and then checking to see if our efforts were paying off, right? Are people liking our pictures? Are they sharing our stuff? We text others and then we check obsessively to see if they text us back. Maybe something's wrong with my phone. My ringer might not be going off. Is it on silent? Do you do that? I know I do. And I have to constantly force myself to put it away. It's hard to focus on important tasks because we've opened ourselves up to more interruptions than ever. And these interruptions are coming from both inside and outside of our minds and from other people. And we're not just allowing more interruptions during our free time. It's happening at work as well. In a study conducted by Gloria Mark, people were interrupted at work several times per day, and it took an average of 23 minutes to get back on task after a full interruption. Yet people were still getting most of their work done. Why? How's that possible? They worked faster and longer to make up for the interruptions. Ugh, now we're adding more time to our work. Have you ever just tried to work with one tab? Do you remember when a browser just was a browser? It didn't have multiple tabs. I remember when Google first came out, or Firefox. It was Firefox. When Firefox first came out. Try to say that five times fast. No, really don't. Let's listen. But anyway, it would give you the option to do all these different tabs. And what a great thing that was. Because before, you would look at something, and then you would need to go look at something else. So what would you do? You would search it and go to that page. Oh, well, what did that other page say? So then you'd have to research the other page or go to your history and back up, right? Now, you can have all these tabs. So anything you want to know, from work to who's up for an Oscar to celebrity news to a new pair of shoes, whatever that is, you can have all those tabs across. How would you not click around? How could you not click around? There's just no way. The distraction is too tempting. What about two tabs? Could you just do two tabs? I might give that a try tomorrow. We also have more social expectations. Back in the day, parents let their kids run around the village and might have trained them in their own area of relative expertise. Today, parents shuttle kids around all weekend, worry about their academic success, create conflict with the coaches over playing time, and help them with school projects to make sure their children's work is good enough to compete with the other kids, whose parents are also helping them. Back in the day, we might have been teased for leaving our crafting tools lying at the entrance of our hut. Today, what is today? We get dirty looks from the neighbors if we don't spend hours each week watering, mowing, fertilizing, trimming, power washing, blowing, spraying. Whew, that's a full-time job in itself. Back in the day, we displayed handmade crafts in our huts and might have spent 5 minutes per week tidying up a bit. Today, we have to make sure the furniture matches the paint. The 12 rooms of our house form a coherent theme. We upgrade to stainless appliances and granite countertops when we're able, and that the house is always spick and span. Back in the day, we bathed once in a while, and we might have done something fancy with our hair from time to time. Today, we spend an hour or more getting ready every morning. We must shower, brush our teeth, take our vitamins, apply our makeup, exfoliate our skin, put on moisturizer, shave, and put together a stunning outfit, all before 7:30. And so on. There are simply too many expectations for anyone to satisfy them all. And that means most people are walking around today both overwhelmed and feeling like they are shirking their duty and they're what? Not measuring up. We also have way more stuff than we've ever had. Have you heard the one about the hunter-gatherer who asked his friend to help him move his stuff from one hut to the next village? His friend said, sure. They were done in 10 minutes. We have more stuff than ever. Our small children get something like 75 new toys each year. We have old computers and phones piling up on shelves and in drawers, and we park cars on the street because our 3-car garage has no room. There are many statistics about how much stuff we have floating around on the internet. Some seem exaggerated, like the claim that the average household has 300,000 items in it. But many seem quite plausible, like the claim that U.S. children own 40% of the world's toys. Regardless of what the exact numbers are, most of us know we have too much stuff. And the more stuff we have, the more stuff we lose track of, and the more stuff we have to keep clean, and the more stuff we have to protect, and the harder it is to get friends to help us move. You know, the last time I was out of town, I like to tell this funny story, but Matt is a purger and he likes minimalist. He doesn't understand an overabundance of stuff and would never understand why anyone would have 8 spatulas. That is moronic in his mind. So while I was out of town, I got a picture via text that said, you can have 3 spatulas and you have 40 minutes to choose. He knew I was busy. So it was going to take me time to really evaluate those 8 spatulas. I tried to compel him with all the stories of what each one of them were for. You know, each one of them had a certain... He wasn't buying it. So we negotiated back and forth, and we finally came down to, I think, 4. It actually could have been 5 because 2 of them were scrapers. That's not really a spatula. It's like a scraper. At any rate, you see where I'm going. He literally puts logic to everything that's laying around. And for some of us that like to hoard a little bit, there isn't any logic. So when you're pushed against the wall, you got to come clean. But why do we need all this stuff? Why do we need 30 plates? Do you have a table that seats 30? Is every course going to be served on a dinner plate? You know, when you start adding these questions up, they don't make sense. It's a great time to purge. So there you have it. It's not our fault. Okay, I'm going to drop the mic now. No, seriously. We live in a complicated world. And as much as we fantasize about back in the day when life seemed a lot simpler, that isn't our reality. However, what you choose to accept as normal does in fact become your new normal. Isn't that crazy how that works? You know, 40% of American workers from top to bottom of the socioeconomic ladder report feeling overwhelmed and work among the longest hours and the most extreme hours of any industrialized country in the world. 1 in 4 Americans don't get paid any overtime, and they don't get paid for time off. Those that do have paid vacation get on an average of 10 to 14 days. The irony, many Americans don't use it. And even when they do, many take work along with them and never unplug. American mothers spend more time taking care of their children than mothers did in the 1960s, even though many more are working full-time. Mothers spend about 14 hours a week caring for their children, which is up from 10 hours a week in 1965. But most parents don't feel like it's enough. Sounds pretty crazy, right? In her book, Overwhelmed, Work, Love, and Play When No One Has the Time, Bridget Schlutte refers to time confetti, which is multitasking to the ridiculous. We all have our own name for it. When we're doing too many things in a limited amount of time and it brings on the experience of feeling stress, of always being behind, running late, running on fumes, getting insufficient sleep, and for all this effort, not feeling like we're getting far on the ever-turning hamster wheel of life. Does that sound about right? Do you identify with that feeling? Work, 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 work. Go to sleep. Get up. Work, 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 work. Do you feel like you're accomplishing anything? You know, in the olden days, I like going back in the day, when meeting someone, we asked, how are you? The answer would be a full answer, like, good, and this is what I'm up to, and blah, blah, blah. Then the answers change to fine. And then in more recent years, the answers have turned to one-word answers, busy. With the busyness comes the underlying value of achievement. What researchers have found is that being busy is now what drives us because it's become an unconscious value where we attribute busyness as a status symbol, where people brag about their level of busyness. If you're busy, then you're important, leading a full life. If you're not busy, you must be lazy, right? Is that what we hear? Now, before you evaluate your level of busyness so you can come up with a cool term to share tomorrow at work, let's consider what all this is doing to us. When the prefrontal cortex, that is the area in the very front, so if you're touching your forehead, if you're not, you can, and that would be where your prefrontal cortex is. The area of the brain responsible for intelligence, how we think, we reason, learn, plan, concentrate, remember, judge, and control ourselves, and is also responsible for regulating blood pressure, heart rate, glucose levels. When it feels rushed and overwhelmed, it shuts down and it shrinks. The prefrontal cortex helps us stay calm and gives us the feeling that we can cope. But when it shrinks and it shuts down, this allows the amygdala to rule. The amygdala is the part of the brain that rules negative emotions like fear, aggression, anxiety, and we become emotional, angry, and frustrated. The World Health Organization found that even though Americans live in the richest country, they are the most anxious. The average high school kid today experiences the same level of anxiety as the average psychiatric patient of the 1950s. Scientists are finding that when children are exposed to stress and overwhelm, it can alter their neurological and hormonal levels, their DNA. A report in USA Today says more than a quarter of teenagers today, that's about 27%, say they experience extreme stress during the school year versus 13% in the summer, and 34% expect stress to increase in the coming year. Stressors range from school to friends, work, family, and teens aren't always using healthy methods to cope. This is what the latest finds are from Stress in America survey from Washington, D.C., based on American Psychological Association. Findings on more than 1,000 teens and almost 2,000 adults suggest that unhealthy behaviors associated with stress may start early and continue through adulthood, with 21% of adults reporting extreme stress levels. The survey says that the teens mirroring adults' high stress levels, right? You watch your parents stress, they freak out over stuff, you start developing those same traits of coping. They are potentially setting themselves up for future or chronic stress and chronic illness. So, big breath in, big breath out. What's the point? Access to oversharing and false realities on the web have given us a level of expectation that is just unrealistic. If we dive in and swim upstream, we will never measure up. Where's the joy, the happiness, the fulfilling connections, the rewards that come from serving, being kind, and giving back? Who has time for all that? It's time to escape life's pressures and find some time for true rewards of life. It starts with learning to say no. If you're a people pleaser like me, it's a hard one to get out. But if you took a moment before you responded to ask yourself a couple of qualifying questions like, do I really have time? Will this cause pressure in other areas of my life? Could I take a pass until I have more availability? You might see that no is your only option. You know, I would love to help, but I just don't have the time. And then leave it at no. I'm sorry, I'd really like to be there for you, but I can't. Then leave it. You don't have to explain yourself. Evaluate your time confetti. Instead of running around keeping the sky propped up, take some time and really evaluate what is causing the most pressure in your life. It could be a season that you just have to weather, but then again, it could be self-inflicted, and you need to be able to see the difference. Does everything have to be solved today? Could you have a 1, 5, or 10-year plan? And then try to create a healthy balance, not something you can snap your finger at, but something you should always try and achieve. You need fun, connections, success, and joy in your life. You know what they say about all work and no play? I think they said, I think it includes the word dull. But try, after what we just learned, replacing that with sick or unhealthy. If it takes you twice as long, but 50% of your time, you're enjoying life, then who's winning here? Look for a chance to give of yourself. This doesn't conflict with the former one of learning to say no. This is looking for an opportunity to give where needed. Love means connecting with the world around you and showing you care. A kind word, a little encouragement, a hot meal, a ride, a show of sympathy, holding the door, giving a hand. The options are endless. Albert Einstein said, "It is every man's obligation to put back into the world at least the equivalent of what he takes out of it." And then never say never. It may not be how it always was, but it isn't time to adopt a new way of thinking, isn't it? Be open to new ideas and try some new strategies. You're never too old or too far gone to reinvent yourself and start again. The beauty about wisdom is it aids in the enlightenment, and it is so obvious that it's startling when you hear it for the first time. We're going to take our last musical break. I want you to think about some of those strategies that you could do to really turn things around. If you've worked yourself up into a lather, it may be something that you have to spin back down. It may not happen with a snap of your finger, but you can definitely start evaluating what's happening and how you could start unloading those plates, right? Maybe combining those plates. If you have 10 of them spinning, why don't you put some stuff on a couple and reduce those down to 5? You're worth it. You need time to enjoy life. This is the time in the show where we like to recap, kind of go over what we've discovered. We've discovered a lot about ourselves, right? Did you identify with a lot of those different points of how busy and overworked and overwhelmed and why? Why are we doing that to ourselves? Why are we trying to keep everything going and everyone happy? You know, interestingly, with the whole multitasking, social media, I uncovered something, at least in myself. You might identify it with it as well. But I feel this responsibility to wish everyone a happy birthday, make sure that I comment if they're going through some tragedy, make sure I share, like, love, all this stuff. And it really becomes almost a job instead of something fun to do. Do you feel that way? Have you sort of felt like social media has now become a responsibility in your life versus just entertainment? Or to read the post. You know, there's those posts that always people catch you with. They're like, if you really liked me, you would read this whole post all the way down to the end, see more. You know, who has time for that? But then you feel like, well, if I don't, you're going to think I don't like you. Or you think, I need to put a love instead of a like because I really want to show you how much I care. And again, like I said, if we accept this as normal, that becomes where the bar is. So let's think about that. Let's start retraining, unplugging. That's why some people just unplug. They go on hiatus. They say, I'm going to take a month off from social media, a season off. I have a friend that takes Christmas off or the winter season every year. She wants to spend it with her family. She doesn't want to have to check in. And that's what it is, this feeling of needing to check in. Now, don't get me wrong. I don't want to bash social media. I love the fact that you can connect with so many people and you can share so many wonderful, inspirational things, which I try to do. I'm just pointing out some little habits and some little responsibilities and expectations. And those are the things that we want to watch out for, because the more we load onto our plates as normal, that becomes the expectation. So we talked about a lot of different things. We talked about those 9 reasons, you know, the fact that we compare ourselves to so many other people. We're just trying to measure up. And that can be overwhelming. What's the point? What's the point? We have more anxiety about everything that's going on in the world. We get access to everything that's happening. Why don't we try turning that off? Can you go a day without the latest news? Or can you go a day without a 24-hour stream of the news? Could you maybe go back to the day and maybe get a couple of updates. I don't know. Maybe you could. What about personal communication? Like really trying to wear all those different hats and appease all those different groups. And then just managing diversity and the challenges of so many different cultures and values and morals, and you just don't know where to turn, what to say, what to do. It is a challenge. And we talked about having much bigger things on our bucket list, more stuff to do than ever before, right? All the social expectations, the more stuff. We're overloaded with things, and as a result, we're overworked. What do you think about those statistics? 40% of American workers. Wow. They don't even take vacation time. We don't unplug. Why? We feel like we're propping up the world, and if we step back and enjoy ourselves for a moment, it's all going to come crashing down. When we stay in that state of angst and anxiety, we do damage to our bodies. We cannot have that level of being overwhelmed for that long period of time. That feeling was meant to use when something bad was about to attack us, right? Ah! We would get that charge of adrenaline. Now we keep ourselves in that state for an extended period of time. That is going to wreak havoc, and we already see it within our teens. We've got to learn to say no. We've got to learn to unplug, relax. So I'm going to challenge you. Stop accepting that life has to be chaotic to be productive. Carve out your 50% and make it a priority. Life will continue to happen whether you're propping up the sky or not. Do your part, but then find your escape. Take time to enjoy life. Right? That's the point. I know you can do it. Thank you for listening to Encouragementology with Kendall Boyson, where we find positive ways to handle some of life's challenges. Someone threw until the path was clear.